seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're very welcome along to a special Golf Weekly. We're very excited about this. We are in McGurk's in Naas, their custom fitting centre. It's all kicking off today. A new store, new fitting centre, which is quite spectacular. Believe it or not, listeners, we're sitting in the fitting centre, right in the heart of it. We have Dave McIntyre here. Hello, Dave.
Good evening.
Your first time on Golf Weekly in some time.
Yeah, it's minimum 6 months, I'd say. Possibly, likely longer than that.
You come for the glamour events.
I only turn up for the really big days.
And we have Peter Laurie. Hello, sir.
Hello.
This is quite the fitting centre, isn't it? To give listeners a sense, we're talking, oh, I'd say 8, 9, 10 feet wide, about another, 10, 15 metres high, and a huge screen here behind us. So this is where it all happens.
This is where you can beat balls to your heart's content and test out all the clubs.
Yeah, we're surrounded by clubs as well, different, I don't know, shafts and head shapes and lofts and various things. I mean, we'll get into talking about various bits and pieces, not least the fact that Phil versus Tiger for $9 million is happening. That's the big news of the week.
Lucky it's not 10, isn't it?
Yeah. But so you're European Tour player. We see all the trucks at tournaments. What was your relationship with equipment? Were you in there checking the minutest of things or a bit more laissez-faire?
I was a little bit more laissez-faire. At the start of the year, I'd be very much check out what equipment I had, what is new, can I hit it a little bit further with new equipment. I was always firm believer of and this is, I would have to say, for the amateurs coming up who are turning pro, to stick with what you have. You know what I mean? Don't be keep on changing clubs on a week-to-week basis. Once you get a set, stick to it. And a lot of the times when you get out on tour, you have so much thrown at you, you can get into the habit of trying to change stuff, or you sign up a deal with the likes of Ping or TaylorMade and you've never used that equipment before. So we've seen it happen a few times on tour. A few of the Nike players who switched from maybe Titleist or Callaway, and they took a long time to get comfortable with the equipment that they had. So it takes a bit of time to get comfortable when you make a change. But once you make a change, you stick with it, and it will be good because you've got tested out for it, you've got measured for it. Mm-hmm. It does fit you. It just has to get, in your head, and you have to get comfortable with it. It's like driving a new car, I suppose.
Yeah. Are there reps that would have a list of which pros haven't signed a deal that aren't contractually obligated to use a certain type of equipment? So if that was you at a certain stage of your career, possibly before 08, before you'd won, are you constantly being plagued by reps saying try this and try that?
You would definitely have, once they would see you wanting to try something with another equipment, they would definitely come over and say, have you tried our driver, have you tried our wedges, have you tried our putter, and give it a go. That's their job. It's, TaylorMade were very much the biggest ones of all. Was they wanted to be number one driver out there.
Okay.
And they would do anything to be number one driver. So what they were doing was, any of the guys coming from tour school, they used to sign them up to use a driver ball deal or just a driver deal. So you might come from tour school, they might offer you $20,000, and coming from tour school and playing from Challenge Tour, $20,000 was a lot of money at the time. And you'd switch. And a lot of guys kind of fell a little bit because they were so used to their own driver, then they had to switch to a new manufacturer's driver. And it took a while for them to fit in.
So you were saying earlier, we were talking, you didn't usually mess around too much. You kind of started your season and you had what you had and you just played with it. So I'm interested about the testing phase. So we're sitting here in this fitting center here. We're in McGurk's. You'll come along and TrackMan will give you a ton of information. They will tell you your spin rates, how much the ball is spinning, obviously distances, launch angles, all that stuff. What is the most important thing for you? What would you look at first if you were there at TrackMan and you were trying to pick a club?
For me, it was always, I hit far too much down on the ball. So my angle of attack was like a minus figure. And when they do the statistics, your angle of attack you have to hit the ball on the up to get the maximum distance.
With the driver,
obviously. With the driver.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe 4 years ago when the new equipment kind of came in, the new ideas. Like, we look around here and you can see probably maybe 30, 40 different shafts. And they're all able to stick into a golf club and away you go. When I came out on tour originally, you had to go to the tour truck. They had to glue it in, first of all, put a new grip on it. Then you had to wait for it to dry and then to trial it out. And if it was fractionally wrong, they'd have to take it back and do it all over again. So it was very labor intensive to get the right equipment. Now they have it to, you know, it's like click and play pretty much. You know what I mean? You click your shaft in, you try it, you might click it a few degrees to the left or a few degrees to the right, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a difference in ball flight or difference in spin and stuff like that. So things have progressed. Technology has progressed so much in the last couple of years that, you know, changing your equipment has become a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Were there many guys who were sponsored by X and then used Y secretly? Like, we all, you know, the football player who'd color in his Adidas boots, blacked them out because he preferred Adidas, but he was sponsored by Nike. Was there a bit of shenanigans going on?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Like, one of the major ones, and we've all seen it on television, is a, you know, Tiger was the number one Nike player. Everything had to be Nike, you know, and he had a Scotty Cameron in the bag. And it was, you know, it was just blocked out as much as possible.
Yeah.
And he used to really like a ping putter grip. And that's what he was used to. That's what he wanted. So they had to get rid of the ping part of, you know, the way it's used to say ping down the side of it. So they had to get rid of that. So there's a lot of situations where guys would, you know, hide what equipment they were using.
Yeah. And are we at the point now, like, are hybrids, have hybrids taken over? Like, should us amateurs, should we be even thinking about hitting 2, 3, 4 irons?
Never in a million years. Like, I'll give an example. Damien, who we were with,
McGrain, yeah.
A couple of weeks ago on Carlo, his lowest iron was a 5 iron. Sorry, his lowest iron was a 6 iron. Philip Price was the same thing. So from... From five, four, three iron, he had rescues in the bag.
Right.
And every amateur, I firmly believe, should have an array of rescues in the bag because they're a whole lot easier hit. The days of the 1 iron and 2 iron and 3 iron and even 4 iron are definitely gone.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't even know what a 2 iron looked like.
Butter knife.
I see, like, Brooks Koepka was hitting a 2 iron beautifully at Bellerive, and I'm just thinking, how can you manage to hit a club straight that it looks like it's a throwback to the dark ages? If I could, I would have wood / hybrids. I'd be hitting in the distance of a 9 iron in with some kind of a wood.
Yeah.
If I could find a club that would do it for me.
Some of these guys are very, very, very strong, so having a 2 iron in the bag is not that much of a problem.
So what do chumps like me and Dave, why can't we hit a 2 iron? Well, lots of reasons, obviously.
Well, lots of reasons, but one being there's not enough loft on it to get it in the air, and there's not enough behind the ball to hit it.
Okay. We can't get enough speed, is it?
Exactly.
Okay. Can you?
Not anymore, no. I used to be quite decent with 1 iron, yeah.
1 iron?
Yeah.
I thought only God and Jack Nicklaus could hit a 1 iron. Wasn't that the great line?
Was it not Trevino? I think it was Trevino.
I don't know, it was Jack. I don't know.
No, I don't know.
What was it, Chrissy O'Connor hit? A 2 iron, was it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But those days are gone. Ball is different. Ball is much harder now. So
I presume me and Dave should just be finding the most forgiving clubs imaginable.
Absolutely. Tennis rackets, as I used to call them. Yeah. You know, the bigger the head, the better.
And so in a driver, does that mean get as much loft as we can handle?
I wouldn't say as much loft on it, but definitely the bigger head, the better. And not a, you know, you don't want 15 degrees on it. You want sort of maybe 10 and a half, maybe 11 degree loft on
it. But don't be going 9 or...
Not at all, no.
Any of that business. No. How often when you're getting measured here, you were hitting it beautifully and then you go to the golf course?
Pretty much my last 2 years on tour,
really?
I tried everything.
Your driving got a bit sticky.
Oh,
at the
yeah,
end.
But that was mental more than anything else. So I could stand in the range and probably hit it with a sweeping brush and hit it well. But when I got onto the golf course, I was sideways.
Okay, so TrackMan and all the club fitting in the world was no good to you?
Not at all, no.
Yeah. Should we be thinking, did you think seriously about your golf ball? I go in and I look at the price first and then I think about the golf ball.
I got a shock. I was on holidays there probably about 2 years ago and had to go into the pro shop and buy a golf balls, which I've never done, to be totally honest with you, yeah, even in my amateur days.
It's a tough life you've lived, Peter.
I know, yeah. And when somebody said to me, a sleeve at 3 Titleist was X amount at the time, and I went, what?
You're mad.
Yeah.
You know?
It's half the reason we get so upset when we lose a Pro V that we've just taken out of the bag. Exactly. You know, it goes in the water. It's like the embarrassment, the penalty shot, and the fact it's about £4.
Why are you playing with Pro Vs? No offense to those of you out there who do play Pro Vs. You're probably good enough to play them. Wilton Ultra, 15 balls for 12 euro, and it means that if you hit it into the deep stuff or into the water, you don't even look, you just keep walking. You've only lost 30 cent.
No,
it's
look,
grand.
To be fair, the Wilton Ultra is the go-to ball as well.
It's
an excellent ball, Peter.
I give you a good story. I was with Strixon at the time, and we were trialing out one of their golf balls, and these guys had come from Japan over, and they'd come to the Strixon guys who were using all their equipment. So there was probably three of us playing in the tournament. I think it was in Germany at the time. So it was my turn to try out these three trial golf balls. And of course, I was probably hitting a 7-iron into one of the greens. And it was Tuesday afternoon. I'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I was tired. Practice rounds to me were, you know, I wasn't very good at them. So I was pretty lackadaisical. And even with this shot, I hit it in the water with his... you know, his three golf balls, that's all he had. They were the, you know, the promo golf balls. So he actually took off most of his clothes, went in and got the ball because he needed to take it back. He only had three of these.
He's trying to sell a new range of ball to touring pros, and he's brought three of them.
These were just off the
factory line.
The test. These were three test golf balls, is all he had. These were the newest of the new.
Would you not wait till you're 10, though, before you?
No, well, he was
to the professionals.
The Japanese were the Japanese at the time, but imagine hitting a ball in the water and he went in and got it.
I don't even know what the Japanese were the Japanese at the time means, but there we go. And so would a ball make a big difference then? Basically, is what I'm saying. Well, if me and Dave, two hackers, go out and play with a Pro V and then go out and play with our Wilson Ultras, you know, two boxes for 30, will we have a different score, do you think, at the end?
Yes, for sure.
For sure?
For sure, yeah.
And in what way would it manifest itself? Like hitting it further? Or?
No, look, the better golf ball you get, and we all know Titleist is the best golf ball out there. And it's a simple, it's a fact, right, that it's the best golf ball out there. So
only if you can get the best out of the golf ball.
If you go around the greens, right, and especially short shots, if you have a Pro V1 against an Ultra, I guarantee you, you'll be able to get it up and down more times with the Pro V1 than you will with the Ultra, because you'll have more touch and feel with the Titleist.
Right.
Okay. It's as simple as that. You play a small little pitch shot, the harder ball will run away from you, the softer ball will certainly check, and you know, and you'll have more control. And putting as well. You know, if you get fast greens and you've got a rock and you're hitting a rock, it's pretty difficult to get any kind of feel off it. So I definitely think, you know, I know you say that they're a whole lot cheaper, and they are, but there's a reason for that. You know, you can do the same thing with a car as well, you know.
Are you sold?
I mean,
you're still buying Wilton Ultras on the way out, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, what I think I'll do is I'll buy Pro V1s, and anytime there's shots over water, I'll just play the Wilton Ultra for that hole. If there's no danger, I think that's maybe the best policy.
And don't think of the water, Joe.
Well, I mean, look, that's the good advice, but I mean, you know, these people say, I don't even see the water. They're lying. I mean, all you can see is the water sometimes.
You played with a Pro V, did you not, in Carlo? Did okay?
They were free.
All right.
Play with it, no problem with it, it's free. Okay, so as we move off, because we are here at McGurk's and their custom fitting centre, and it's all kicking off here, and I guess it's great to see new golf shops because we keep hearing the game's in trouble, so it's good to have stuff like this. Any other last bits and bobs of advice you'd give someone who was coming to get a fitting?
I would definitely come and I'd do a little bit of practice beforehand, mm-hmm. so you're nice and comfortable when you arrive, rather than just getting straight out of the car, from the office. You know, and kind of not having practiced. And the other thing is, when we get lessons, you know, our swings sometimes change, which means you sometimes have to change equipment as well. So it's not all about equipment. There's a lot of, you know, good, you know, PGA pros out there who can give very good lessons. But then when you get the lessons, then you should come by and buy the best of equipment, because you will get the benefit out of it.
Yeah.
But you can't just come into a shop and think you're going to buy a game. That doesn't happen. Get the lessons, buy the equipment, rather than the opposite way around.
Was there a consensus on tour about what the best make was?
Whoever was willing to pay the most money.
Yeah, exactly. You're right there. You're bang on right there.
Yeah. But deep down, there was no general sense. Well, look, we all know they're the best, but like,
to be honest with you, you'd see a lot of the manufacturers. I saw it over the years. I felt Callaway made a terrible mistake. They used to have a great CTU ball, was what it was called. It was blue and it was red. Fantastic off. It was exactly like the Pro V1. It was brilliant. And they changed it to the Hex ball, and after that, I couldn't. I used Callaway ball at the time. Once they brought in the Hex ball, I moved straight away from it.
It put a hex on things, did it?
Exactly.
Apologies. So let's talk USPGA. Myself and Nathan were on last week, or Fionn, and we had Claude Harmon on as well, Brooks Koepka's coach, and he was very interesting. He was telling a story about Brooks Koepka when they arrived at the US Open at Shinnecock this year. Obviously, he was defending champion, and he played quite a good first round. And Brooks and Claude Harmon stood in the media area afterwards, presuming defending champion had just shot a decent first round. Someone will interview me. And they stood for 10, 15 minutes, and all the hive of activity around them, no one came near them. And they got in the car, drove away from the course, and Brooks, not overly impressed, he said, sod them, when I win, they're going to have to interview me. So a bit of a chip in his shoulder going on. And suddenly he's won three majors in the space of 14 months. Suddenly he's level with Padraig Harrington. It's an unbelievable career all of a sudden.
It is. It's incredible. And to be honest with you, on our talk of it, none of us picked out Brooks to win the tournament. And you say to yourself, why didn't I think of Brooks? Yeah. Like, you know, he hits the ball magnificently. He's a great putter. He's got a good Irish guy on the bag. And, like, why didn't I see it? And you say to yourself, you know, I must be mad or something. But, Brooks, great player and well-deserving.
Yeah. Dave, I presume you were watching it on 11 Sports.
I wasn't watching on 11 Sports. I watched it on Thursday and Friday on 11 Sports, and the coverage was just so bad that I had to give up. It was incredibly amateurish. I'm looking at two dudes in a box somewhere in England. Like, come on.
So you stream it somewhere else?
I managed to find a way to stream CBS to my TV.
Okay.
Yeah. Whether it was legal or illegal, who knows?
Yeah.
But anyway, I was enjoying Jim Nantz as I was watching the PGA Championship. And I loved it. You and I have talked many times on this podcast about Tiger's return. Now, probably when you and I last spoke, his return was a very distant possibility. Mm. Now, obviously, he's contending for majors. And I didn't want him to win, but I wanted him to contend. And that's what made Sunday so special. And I think, I'd say the chip on Brooks Koepka's shoulder grew even more so after lifting the Wanamaker, because all anyone ever wanted to talk about was the fact that Tiger was back and Tiger was contending and he made this brilliant run, and the roars from around the course were all focused on him. Now, this is the guy who's won his third major in 18 months, and he isn't the center of attention. And there always seems to be a sideshow whenever Brooks Koepka wins a major championship.
Yeah, I went onto the Golf Channel website the next morning to see it be all about Brooks, and it was Brooks. I could hear the Tiger roars. You know, clearly he'd just been asked about Tiger. Shane Lowry was on last week as well and said he'd never experienced a golf course like it. Tiger made 8 birdies. He said you could hear every single birdie no matter where you were, even to the point where, like, there was a domino effect, as in initial roar where Tiger would make the birdie and then the leaderboards would all change around the course and the place would just go nuts. He said Justin Thomas at one stage, you know, miles away in the course, he was playing with Thomas, was over a putt, the leaderboard changed, the place erupted, and Thomas had to step away from his putt for a couple of seconds, a minute even.
But Thomas said it was great.
Yeah, they
now,
they all
whether
loved
he's
it.
Lying or not.
No, I think I think they all loved it. I think they all loved being part of the Tiger show.
I think they have to, because Tiger's put a, or he's been able to get so much money into golf, and you know he's filled the boots of these lads, really.
How good did he look to you,
Tiger? He looked very good. He really did. Still a little bit suspect with the driver.
He didn't hit a fairway until the 10th.
Yeah.
He could come to the McGurk's nice fitting centre.
4 under.
Yeah, how did he do that? How does he not hit a fairway till 10?
Well, somebody said after the tournament, if Tiger was playing from where Rory was hitting his second shot, he would have shot in the 50s on Sunday.
Yeah.
He would have shot 57 or 58.
It was a Ballesteros front nine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was literally everywhere. And he'd get it out of the trees, hit the shot, and get it up and down, or hold the putt, or whatever it may be.
What's your analysis? What is he doing with his driver? Like, when you're watching, what the hell is going on?
To be honest with you, he's a little bit what we talked about for yourself. He gets the club very caught inside. And he can do nothing with it. It's either straight to the right or he's too much hand action and to the left.
Okay.
He doesn't seem to be able to get his speed from the top of his backswing, you know, with it, with his solid motion, with his hands out in front of him. He seems to be his hands and his body's just got stuck. He doesn't do it really with any other club in the back.
So what happens in the back nine when he starts stitching it then?
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't do it with any other club in the back. He does it just with the driver.
But he did start to hit fairways on the back nine.
You could see he was kind of shaping it a little bit more on the back nine to try and get it in play. So he'd be a bit like Bubba Watson in relation to kind of shaping it. He took the swing out of his head and said, right, I need to hit this one.
Okay, so he's compensating. He knows where it's going.
Well, he had some idea.
Get he changed the landing area almost.
Yeah, well, he had to change it. He couldn't rip it like the others, you know.
It was amazing because he said afterwards that he was on the driving range and he couldn't hit the driver. So he said he went onto the course at a major on a Sunday and he said on the tee, I was deciding, am I going to miss this one left or am I going to miss this one right? And he might say, right's the better miss here. Straight into the trees. So then he said, left's the better miss here. Left. Even the mental resilience to play golf like that at a major on a Sunday was very impressive.
Very much so. But you look at, go back a couple of years, Ian Baker Finch, right? Just won a US Open, or British Open.
Uh-huh.
2 years later, he couldn't keep it on the golf course. Couldn't keep it on, destroyed his whole game, packed it in, went to the commentary.
What happened to him?
He just couldn't hit it straight.
But does he know, like, why? Like, why did these things happen?
All in his head. Absolutely. He hit it out of bounds off the first tee box in St. Andrews.
Yeah.
Like, that's missing the world,
yeah.
You know, to miss it left there.
He said it was the most embarrassing moment of his career.
Yeah.
Missing, heading OB on the first at St. Andrews. Yeah. Well, that's 27 years ago, and I think that was in an era where a lot of guys were really tinkering with their swing. Like, Faldo was another one, and it took him off the radar for a couple of years as well. I mean, but it's something I think that can still happen to these guys, but I don't know if that's the case with Tiger, though, is it? How different is his swing because of his back? Out of 100, obviously, is his swing, if you were to mirror the 97 swing to the 2018 swing, how close are they?
He's actually getting back to swing like he used to swing it, you know, with Butch Harmon. But all the other swing thoughts that he had and all the other movements that he went through, Hank Haney,
Sean Foley,
and
Chris Como.
Yeah, like, I personally think, like anything, you know, if you have it and he had it, why change it?
He was always a bit quirky with the driver, though. Quirky's a kind word.
But he wasn't that bad.
Okay.
He wasn't as bad as he was on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
It's mad, really, though, isn't it? Like, it's just that he can, because he was stitching his irons.
Mm.
Okay, I appreciate it's a different club and you're doing a lot of different things. But, like, he was clearly feeling very good with a golf club in his hand half the time in the course, that he couldn't find something with the driver.
I'm surprised that he didn't go back to maybe 3-wood or like his 2-iron off the tee, where he seems to have a shorter shaft in his hand. And as I said to you, he covers it much better.
Yeah.
But with the driver, it's long, and he has this tendency to want to swing it at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
One thing that didn't change and hasn't changed in the 20 years was the guy who's playing with Tiger when he's on a run with the red shirt on a Sunday at a major. Is not a factor. We did not see Gary Woodland at all on the back nine.
Is that who he was playing with? Yeah.
He was, you wouldn't even know.
No.
He just happened to be, he may as well have been a marker, with Tiger being the odd man in an odd numbered field at going out the Sunday. And that's happened. How many times has that happened over the years? Like, unless it's a Bob May completely,
Francesco Molinari.
Molinari.
6 weeks ago.
Yes. But Tiger wasn't on that run. Like, Tiger blew up on the 11th, was it, when he threw in that double bogey after it left
11,
the green?
Yeah.
So, like, Gary Woodland had to watch Tiger basically go hole by hole, birdie attempt after birdie attempt, crowd going mad, leaderboards changing, and he just wilted away and he wasn't a factor when he was, like, right in the mix going into the final round. And that is what intrigues me, that this guy who's now in his 40s still has the power to destroy his opposite number just by making a couple of birdies.
Mm.
It doesn't matter who's doing what else on the field. Like, Gary Woodland wasn't spooked by the fact that Brooks Koepka kept holding putts.
And so, Peter, like, you watch, okay, this is all very encouraging with Tiger. He still walks gingerly. Like, there's something about the way he moves. I mean, it's still, I just feel like he could break at any minute. But assuming that all holds up, do we now kind of make him more likely to win a major than not win a major?
If he wins another major, if he does, it'll be like one. He's not going to get to Jack's record. That's gone.
Yeah.
There's far too many good players out there now who are not scared of Tiger, no matter, you know, even if they're playing with him on the final day. Will he win a normal event? Yes, I definitely think so. I think he'll get it into his head. You know, I said it before, he made a huge mistake in St. Andrews, or not St. Andrews, in Carnoustie, should I say, on the 11th hole when he hit the person and he got out of his routine and he saw the leaderboard and he was in the lead and blah, 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 blah. He just, you know, he made a mistake. But will he make that mistake again? I don't think so. Mm. I think he can win, as I said to you, another tournament, but maybe one more major if he gets lucky, depending on the golf course.
Okay. Is Augusta the most likely?
No, I would have said a British Open is more likely. You know, where you can hit that 2-iron off the tee like he did in Carnoustie and keep it in play and play to his strengths. I don't think Augusta. Augusta's becoming a long hitter's golf course. You know, they keep on moving the tee boxes back, and it won't suit Tiger.
One last question then on the USPGA is Brooks Koepka. Is he going to, if we kind of have McIlroy as the eldest of the post-Tiger generation, although Koepka's not that young, actually, I think he's 28, 29, but could Koepka sneak up now and end up, of the whole Spieth, McIlroy, Justin Thomas, all this post-Tiger generation, he could be the one who ends up with the most majors. Like, this is a real deal guy. This isn't a Harrington-esque 14-month, he's red-hot kind of, you know, form where he wins all his majors in a glut. Like, he does look to you like he has the game to end up with 4, 5, 6 of these things.
Absolutely. And do you know what's great about Brooks is that he's come from such a hard place. He didn't get his card on the American Tour.
Did you ever meet him?
Yeah, I met him loads of times, played a bit of golf with him.
And what was that like?
He was good, but he wasn't. I didn't see this in him.
When was this?
He played Challenge Tour, and then he came on to the main tour.
2013.
Yeah, okay. And I looked at his name on Challenge Tour before that, and you could see him going around a few events. He used to have I used to call him the dinosaur on the bag. Ernie Els's old caddy, Ricky Roberts, and then eventually, you know, he got to the stage where he got somebody on the bag that he could relate to, rather than having some old guy tell him what to do. Now he has some, you know, a young guy on the bag, and he can have a bit of crack with him and go on from there. And that's what he needed.
Right.
His management team kept on saying, oh, he needed the best caddy. He needed the best, you know, elder statesman. Knew exactly. And he didn't. He needed, you know, a guy to have a bit of fun with.
So the elder statesman caddy is just kind of saying, do it this way. Do what I say. Trust me.
Yeah, and Brooks wasn't like that. He was, you know, he wanted to, you know, take out the driver and bash it, which was great to see. It was great to see, I thought, coming down the last hole, you know, he'd pretty much won the tournament. He had a 2-shot lead, and Ricky puts the bag down. Ricky Elliott puts the bag down on 18, takes the head cover off the driver, and, like, he's not hitting any other club.
Yeah.
You know, like, he could have hit a couple of irons down the last and won.
Well, Claude Harmon was saying last week that, I mean, it seems like maybe Koepka's had a period of being told what to do. Yeah. So there's the caddy you mentioned, and then Claude Harmon was saying the first time that Koepka came to him for a lesson, they were working on the driver, and Koepka said to him, yeah, I had a draw with the driver, I hate hitting the draw. And he says, why do you hit a draw then? And he says, my coach teaches a draw, so I hit a draw. And he goes, well, I'll teach you how to hit the fade. And he turned to him 5 or 6 shots in, and he said, it can't be this easy. And Claude says, it's that easy. Yeah. It just suits him. From then on, he's such confidence in the driver.
He's so strong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He doesn't need to draw it. Like, he can just hold on to it and smash it down the middle of the fairway.
Was he talkative? Was he nice young man? Was he
arrogant? Very nice. Himself or Peter Uihlein came across. They played Challenge Tour, and then both of them got onto the main tour. Peter Uihlein was, his father ran Titleist.
Yeah. I played in a pro-am with Peter Uihlein before.
Okay, and lovely guy as well.
Yeah, great guy.
You know, really nice. And Brooks and himself used to hang out together. And they enjoyed life. And that's what you want, you know, two kids coming up and... They obviously had a few quid behind them, so they weren't too worried about, you know, staying out in Europe. But he's learned the hard way.
Mm.
You know, he hasn't got it, you know, straight away. He hasn't been silver spooned onto, you know, America, got his card or whatever, and then gone on from there.
Yeah.
He's had to go through challenge tours and hire cars and play in Finland, play in Russia, play wherever. You know, he's learned the hard way, and it's good to see.
Peter hasn't got back to my texts recently, but I'm sure he's just busy. He'll get back onto me soon.
He's probably just looking at his friend thinking, why was it him and why was it not me?
Uihlein was talked about as also huge potential.
He was, yeah.
So when you say you played with Koepka 2012 territory and he was good, but you didn't see this. When you say good, what were you thinking is most likely going to happen to this guy? Good European tour career?
No. I could have seen him, you know, getting his card eventually in America and doing very well in America and probably winning, you know, a couple of tournaments or maybe a tournament a year. I didn't see three majors.
Well, physically, what was he like then? Was he the beast he is now?
He was big,
a lot lighter?
No. He was big. He was
already in the gym.
Yeah. He was a big young man, but he wasn't that big. He certainly put on a lot of strength, and you can see it in him now. His arms are massive.
Yeah. How do you explain that the 75% return on PGA Tour title wins being majors? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I know we've had guys like Andy North, for example, two PGA Tour wins, both majors. I'm struggling to think of another in that sort of
Koepka in his press category. In his press conference, he said, "I prefer playing in majors." He says he's more patient on the course.
I could probably throw out an idea here. It would be that he's played so much now around the world that, you know, going to another tournament, it's another tournament. Mm. It's not every tournament is like a major to him, rather than, you know,
none of them are like a major.
Exactly. You know, so he just does what he wants to do. And probably he sees he's better off, as you said. He can gauge the field a little bit better in the major, and he knows, right, I don't really need to shoot the lights out here. Yeah. I just need to play my game and be a little bit more patient than
I normally am. It's not target golf.
No.
And someone like him with his temperament goes into a major and he looks at the field and he could probably rule out 65% of it, whereas he has to compete with the entire field at the Waste Management Open in Phoenix because he knows they could all target flags and hit wide fairways
and shoot the lights out. Yeah,
yeah. He was saying he has a bigger entourage at majors as well. Rents a house, gets his private chef in, family there, girlfriend there. Did you ever a chef? No.
No. No. Okay. I cooked myself, all right, but no, I didn't employ one.
You and Damien cooking away.
Absolutely. No,
dream couple.
You wouldn't eat anything Damien cooked. Trust me.
Salmonella McGrain strikes again.
Yeah.
So the big news, of course, is that Phil and Tiger. Well, actually, two big pieces of news. Phil Mickelson's now on Twitter. So that's great news.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun. And Phil versus Tiger, Thanksgiving weekend in Las Vegas, $9 million, winner takes all. They're not doing the Shell Wonderful World of Golf thing where you get, you know, it's winner takes all, $9 million. It's on pay-per-view TV, though. I mean, they're pitching this as a boxing match where people are going to pay like €25 to watch to watch this, which I think is ambitious.
Do they get the $9 million regardless of pay-per-view sales?
Yeah. That's all sponsors' money, yeah.
So when this tanks, which I really hope it does, the boys are still going to walk away with $4.5 million apiece, but...
No. It's
$9 million each?
No, it's $9 million winner takes all.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
But, are you telling me the guy who doesn't win walks away with nothing?
Yes.
I'd have my doubts. I'd also have my doubts that FedEx haven't stepped in here and said, lads, whatever happens, you cannot be playing for $10 million. You can't be playing for the same amount that our tour championship winner is going to play for in 3 weeks' time.
I was thinking about that earlier.
Whether
that's
we have to
said,
sweeten the know, deal in some way.
They should play for $10 million and $1.
I think they should play for their own money.
Well, that's the point.
You know, and put it on normal TV and let them at it. You know what out of each other, then just let them at it.
It's such a cop-out.
Yeah.
Like, they're playing for Nike money and KPMG money.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you put 4.5 up, I'll put 4.5 up, and let's really do this thing. Yeah. And let's put it on free-to-air TV, and you'll get millions of people watching.
Let everybody watch it, too.
No, they've ruined the essence of it here.
Correct.
But it should have happened 15 years ago.
Yeah.
This is two alphas slugging it out. No one is paying $25. Anyone who's watching this has streamed it legally. Like, there's no question.
There's a pattern here emerging with you.
Well, I won't be streaming it legally either. Who cares?
Apparently 11 Sports are going to stream it.
They're going to take the rights.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Who cares? Like, I know we're going to talk Ryder Cup in a moment. Yeah. Neither are in they're in the same Ryder Cup team potentially. Neither are in the top eight.
Yeah.
So they're both relying on a pick from Jim Furyk. Neither have won a major, one since 2008, the other since 2013. Mm. Mickelson was won once since 2013. albeit it was this year in Mexico, and Tiger hasn't won a tournament in 3 years. Like, these guys are also Rams right now.
Yeah.
And yet they expect people to tune in and pay 25 quid for the privilege of watching them. Two of the worst drivers of the ball in the game.
I tell you, the rough will be low. The fairways will be wide.
Exactly. Well, it's going to be in Vegas, isn't it? It's going to be one of the municipal golf courses or whatever.
Something like that. I'd say the pins will be tucked dead center of the greens. Absolutely. There'll be lots of birdies. Yeah. It'll be that kind of, they don't want to be embarrassed.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
But what does it say about, like, whose idea was it?
It was Mickelson's, wasn't it? It was initial idea from Mickelson.
I guess I'll be short of a few quid. In answer to your kind of issue with it, and I totally agree with you, but I guess the point has been made, nowhere along the line did we get a Phil and Tiger on a Sunday in the same group kind of moment. You just figured and hoped it would happen in a major eventually, and it never did. So there's almost an element of, well, why leave it to chance? Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It happened with 2006 Masters, but they weren't in the same group.
No.
They were going head to head, shot for shot, but they were one group ahead of each other.
Yeah.
Never happened before or after. What I would love, if you're going to go down this road, is that A, it's their own money, and B, it's foursomes. So you only get to play one ball, and it's McIlroy and Tiger against Mickelson and Justin Thomas, and the purse is $5 million, and the two lads have to stump up $2.5 million apiece if they lose, but you also can't play your own golf ball. Like, you have to start. I think we need some, like, big game beasts in the trees or something, like a Tiger, like almost gladiator style. So lads know if they take too long over a putt, they might get bitten by a rattlesnake or something, because this is not interesting enough as it is.
No, it's definitely. I mean, they're going to mic them up. That's the big. Phil was talking about that today. They'll be wearing microphones, so you'll get to hear the banter.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, they're going to be trading real insults. Yeah.
They hit off the first and they walk down the fairway. What's the TV going to do then? They have to wait till they get to the second shots. It's going to be live. And then you have to wait. No, it'll be terrible.
Well, 11 Sports will go back to their booth in England and we'll get to watch the two lads again.
They're not going to put you in charge of marketing this thing with that kind of enthusiasm.
Absolutely not.
I think the plan is they'll mic them up and hopefully there'll be gold. They might tell stories. I guess they'll interview them.
They'll never tell proper stories. Like, you know, we could hear a great story of, you know, Tiger in the K Club. You know, what was that like when he did lots of practice there and came over for the British Open? You know, you're never going to hear stories like those ones.
What?
What story is that?
Okay, we'll move on.
Hang on.
Bloody hell.
You can't just throw in a bomb like that and then just walk away from it.
That's what I'm good at doing.
We're going to talk after this.
Yeah.
And if it's in any way broadcastable, we're going
to
bring this.
McGurk's crowd.
No.
Well, we might say it's...
No, look, we'll
turn off the recording equipment and then you can tell the McGurk's crowd.
No, we're never going to get stories. Like, you know, Tiger has been very much the, you know, when everybody found out of his, let's say, his...
Off-course activities.
Off-course activities. Everybody was shocked, bar a few people, of course. And, you know, is he ever going to talk about those kind of things? You know, playing against Phil, will Phil ever slag him over about sort of standing up in front of so many people and saying he's apologized for, you know, because he...
To be fair, even if they weren't mic'd up, I don't think they'd be talking about that stuff.
You're not going to get any decent material out of them, so you might get a few kind of small little low-sized jabs, but you're not going to get any gory details.
I, for one, will be watching every second of this.
Okay. Will you?
Oh, yeah.
He actually wants to commentate on it. Maybe actually Newstalk might send you over
to commentate.
Yeah, they don't send him to the Open. They're already sending him to,
to Vegas. He's going to the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, well, okay. Speaking of Ryder Cup then. So you were having a look. You were doing some research, some hard work for the podcast, for the good listeners today.
I did a bit of writing out and then I decided I'd take a photograph of it. Actually, I learned this trick from McGrain. He used to take photographs. He'd never, like, you know, copy and paste it. He'd take a photograph and send it to you.
Okay.
So that's the way he worked on it.
You said to me before, so I said, do you know enough to give us the lowdown? And you said yes, and you said it's a nightmare for Thomas Bjorn. So what's going on? Where are we?
Well, okay, at this moment in time, we have Molinari, Rose, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood, John Rahm, McIlroy, Noren, and Olsen in the team.
That would strike me as the strongest eight they've ever had.
Okay, that's quite a good team. Like, let's be honest, you know, very
Would you
solid.
Say that's the best eight?
That's probably the best eight.
They've
ever had. Playing very good golf.
It's funny, I think of John Rahm as American all the time. I keep forgetting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. There's like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rookies in that eight?
But they're not real rookies, though.
John Rahm's not a rookie.
Well, he is, though.
But he's not, though.
Why?
Because he's so experienced.
He's played all over the place.
2 years, really.
He's a rookie in that competition. But he's not like, you know, he's not somebody coming from tour school and, you know, has never played the tour and never competed or never won a tournament or whatever.
Who are Bjorn's options for picks?
But then, so now he sits down and he has four picks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who are the nailed on picks?
Well, I personally think.
Yeah.
You know.
Your captain. Let's go.
Well, he's going to pick Poulter.
Fair enough. Poulter's won on tour this year.
Won on tour.
And he's the postman and all that.
Right.
He's 12th at the moment.
Okay.
That's
one. Three to go.
He's going to pick Westwood.
No, he's
not.
There's no chance.
No chance that
Westwood embarrassed himself the last time.
Who's his buddy?
Doesn't matter. Chubby Chandler.
Same management company.
Chubby Chandler. Oh, yeah, but look.
No,
he's not Chubby Chandler. He's gone to IMG.
Okay. There's absolutely no chance.
Himself and Bjorn are thick as thieves, but, I mean, it's too brazen. This selection would be too brazen.
Okay.
Sorry, are you serious? Okay. Is he going
to... I'm deadly serious.
No way.
Okay.
Can somebody get their phone out there and get us the odds on Lee Westwood being in the European Ryder Cup team?
He played well today. Ah. So did Harrington. Is Harrington going to get picked too?
Not a chance.
You are saying this deadpan look for our podcast listeners.
I reckon
straight face.
Westwood will get a pick. He'll get the fourth pick or
but whatever. Bjorn will be laughed out of it if he picks Westwood.
He won't.
With Garcia and Stenson there as well.
Okay. Garcia hasn't qualified for the FedEx. Has played pretty crap all year. Where is he now? He's not going to play in the next two tournaments. He hasn't entered this week. He hasn't entered next week. You know, why is Thomas going to pick him?
He won a major last year.
I don't
think he's a Ryder Cup legend, which is only one of those boxes that's ticked by Westwood.
I don't think he'll pick Garcia. He's playing too badly.
I think he gets in. Well, and I think he feels that the Ryder Cup brings the best out of Garcia.
If he picks Lee Westwood, it will be a scandal.
You've heard it here first, so...
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's move swiftly onwards then. Okay, so his choices are Rafael Carabello.
Yeah.
Right? Is he going to get a pick? Knox, I say no chance.
Russell Knox?
Russell Knox.
Okay.
He's probably the next man in, is he, in the world points list?
Russell Knox is ninth on the European list.
Are we thinking of Russell? Has my head gone melted here? Russell Knox, who won the Irish Open.
Yeah, Scottish lad.
Oh, he'll definitely get picked. No, he won't.
Oh, I don't know.
He should have been picked by Clark 2 years ago, and he should be picked now.
Yeah, I don't know if he gets. Really? I don't know if he gets. I don't know if a rookie gets a pick.
Well, give me my other options.
Okay, why is Knox not playing this week, and why is he not playing next week?
I don't know.
Because he's been told he's in the team.
He's been told he's not in the team, in my opinion.
Okay.
Casey.
Oh yeah, he has to get picked. Paul Casey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Has to get picked.
Has to.
Okay.
What? Jesus. Are we watching the same sport here? What's going on?
I would agree with you. I think he possibly should get picked. He hasn't made the team on merit. He probably should have got picked when Harrington got picked to go to, was it Glen Eagles?
Yeah.
Then he had a bee in his bonnet and left the European Tour.
Yeah.
And now has come back last year.
Yeah.
To try and make the team.
Hmm.
Thomas is very
European-focused
and wouldn't like what Casey has done.
Yeah.
And he snubbed the team.
They changed the rules almost to give Casey
a chance, and he snubbed them.
Yeah, but so Casey is going to get picked. Like, Casey's made such
great
golf.
I would say Casey is not going to get picked.
He's 11th on the world points list.
I would say Casey's not going to get
picked. He's 11th in the world's point list.
You're basing your Westwood case solely on who he knows.
I'm basing my ideas on, I've known Thomas probably for the last 10 years, and I know the type of person he is, right? And he's picking the team. And that's what I'm basing.
But if he's picking the team based on who his pals are,
no,
he's going to make
saying,
a complete
no, hold
balls
on a
this.
Second. I'm not saying Westwood was a very good Ryder Cup player.
He was.
Two years ago was a sham, though, wasn't it?
He played absolute shock.
Like, he lost them a lot of points.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So
let's go. Let's just keep on
going.
You're
saying Paul Casey, 11th in the world points list, is not going to make it.
I don't think he gets a pick.
Thomas is going to have an awkward press conference on Sunday if they don't win. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. Who's your picks?
I need to know all the options. Okay, Paul Casey won.
Yes.
Henrik Stenson, too. Sergio Garcia.
I'm not sure about him. Maybe. I would have Russell Knox in there.
Ian Poulter,
4. I think they're my picks. Is there anyone else there in contention? That I can bump Russell Knox out
Thomas
for?
Peters.
He was
picked last time. Absolutely superb. Won 4 out of 4.
I don't know how well he's playing lately. Is he doing all right?
He's leading today.
Yeah. Okay, Knox out, Peters in. Peter's like, he'll bomb it, he'll love it, and he's had the temperament, he'll rise to the
occasion. It's not a bomber's golf course.
I still just think length is important.
There isn't really anybody else. Like, we're, if we take Lee Westwood as being a possible
pick. Can I just give
pick,
you my final four picks
six.
For a second?
Matt, pick four from those six?
No, I don't think so. Matt's terrible. I'm not a fan of Matt.
Right.
Can I give you my four?
Yeah.
It's very simply Paul Casey, Ian Poulter, I'll throw in Peters, and Henrik Stenson. Now, you're telling me Lee Westwood's getting
you're telling me you're leaving out Garcia?
He's playing dreadfully. And even on Sunday, when he needed to show something, he threw in three bogeys in the back nine. That's how Seamus Power kept his card. We'll touch on that in a second.
Yeah.
Like, Garcia's shown nothing. Garcia was at the point of saying, leave me out, coach.
Won a major last year.
That's last year, though. It's a long time in golf.
It's not on the Ryder Cup list. But
I'd have no qualms if Garcia was in ahead of Peters. Okay, that might be the judgment one. But I think Casey, Poulter, and Stenson are locks. And then it's Garcia or Peters. Like, that you're bringing on old man Westwood crumping up the hill here. Yeah.
And
an
if you're
absolute
going,
shocker.
Garcia is ahead of Westwood on both lists.
Grand. The Westwood thing is hilarious.
Like, are you taking the piss?
No, I'm not.
It's just because you know Thomas Bjorn better than Joe or I.
And to be fair, that's an interesting thing to get. You're getting a read, so he will not like Paul Casey being a PGA Tour type. He's been on the European committee.
He was chairman of the committee, yeah. Right? And I sat on it for 6 years. Okay, they changed the rules for Casey to come and make the team.
Yeah, and he
right.
Didn't.
All he had to do was play one tournament extra.
Yeah,
and he refused.
Yeah,
right. So now that he hasn't made the team, you know, there is a case of saying to him, "Hard luck."
Yeah.
So I could get on board with that.
Okay,
fair enough.
Not at the preference of Westwood, though.
So Bjorn is picking this team, really, not just with winning in mind, but also the ramifications for the European Tour and the sense of the health of the Tour. That's why Casey might struggle. Now, the Westwood thing. So there's an IMG overlap there, is there?
Yes.
Okay. And is Westwood playing well in the last few months? I haven't seen him.
No.
He's playing this week again.
Solid. He's played solid golf.
Yeah.
But he hasn't won.
Okay.
And he hasn't contended.
And was there a Chubby Chandler link with Westwood and Clark 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah, but that all fell out. Big time.
Right.
There was a Westwood
who
left.
Who fell out with who?
Westwood left ISM with Chubby.
Yeah.
With not very happy with the way he was managed over the last couple of years, so I believe.
Okay.
His separation, Westwood's separation. There was a couple of things that came from that, and then Lee went in and looked at a few things and said, "I'm out of here."
Okay, fair enough. We'll say no more about that on air, I think, for the
exactly
time being.
Yeah. We'll talk about that
and the Tiger K Club story afterwards.
Yeah. Okay. That'll be McGurk's bonus material only.
Okay,
so we don't get sued. So sorry. Were you giving us who you'd pick or who Bjorn would pick? Because I feel like
I think this is what Bjorn is going to pick. Right. So my thinking of what he's going to pick, he's definitely going to pick Poulter, okay?
And we can't argue with that, can we?
Grant. I don't think he picks Garcia, and I don't think he picks Casey. I think he picks Stenson. I think he picks Carabello, and I think he picks Peters.
So not Westwood.
You didn't have Westwood in there.
Sorry. Since you've talked me out of fucking Westwood... I go back on what I said.
So who have you put in instead of Westwood there?
I put in Peters instead of Westwood.
Come on, before at least...
Oh, sorry, Carabello instead of
we
Westwood.
We mocked you, but we respected you.
Yeah.
But now
I tell you what my exes here are guys who are not playing next week. And I was very surprised not to see them play.
And you take that as a sign as being they've been
no,
told.
No, I'm not taking this. I'm taking it as a sign if I really wanted to impress somebody, I'd play. I wouldn't back away from playing. Mm. And next week, Carabello's not playing, Poulter's not playing, Knox is not playing, Stenson's not playing, Casey's not playing, Westwood's not playing, and Garcia's not playing.
So you think they all know one way or another at this stage?
I think...
Yeah. See, they could have just as easily been told, look, I want you in the team. How are you feeling? Are you tired? Yeah, I'm a bit tired. Well, then don't worry about playing next week. Be fresh for the Ryder Cup.
But this is Thomas's home event. He wants... It's made in Denmark Open.
Yeah.
He wants the best team. He fought tooth and nail for this to be the final qualifying event.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
And it's been ignored.
And it's been ignored. The field is terrible.
Why isn't he telling the guys who are on the bubble,
I don't know.
If you want me to consider you for a pick, I want to see you in Denmark next week.
I don't know. I can't understand it.
Like, we remember what happened with Montgomery and Glen Eagles. Was it Eduardo Molinari?
Yeah.
He pretty much said to him, you need to win this weekend or you're not in the team. And Molinari goes out and wins.
So
and
he had to pick.
Who was it? I can't remember who was that lost.
Look, Casey. That lost Casey out. Got the Casey.
Was it Casey got lost out? And that is the way. Like you lay down the law, and Molinari came up with the goods.
Just a last question on Bjorn, because I want to get your thoughts on the American team, and then we'll finish on Seamus Power. Probably unfair to ask you it this way because you've known him for a long time, but he's clearly a grumpy sort, and you know, kind of a tough personality in some ways. But is he popular on tour, or would he rub people up the wrong way?
Oh no, he'd rub people up. He's a Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay.
You know, a complete Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know what you're going to get on a daily basis. One day he'll walk past you and scowl at you, and the next day he'll have a chat with you for and buy you coffee or whatever else. That's just Thomas.
Some people can pull that off, and it's like, oh, that's just Thomas. He's so funny. Other times, other people can be like, okay, no, that guy bugs me.
Yeah.
It'd be more the latter.
He's more of, yeah. Right. Like, I've seen him at a committee meeting, and because he didn't get a good tea time, from the tour, it was in Scotland, he tore into the tournament director because the tournament director gave the American guys who were coming over to play the Scottish Open then the British Open a better tea time.
Yeah.
And he roasted them in front of everybody. And I'm sitting there going, Thomas, I actually think you need to get out, you know, because, you know, you're bringing personal stuff into this. We're meant to be here about the tour and the, you know, the collective rather than just you.
Mm.
So how does that personality take to the duties required of a Ryder Cup captain? All the media, all the scrutiny, all the criticism if you get your picks wrong.
He will be...
He's going to lose his rag, isn't he?
If things go wrong, he will be savaged and he won't take it very well.
Be great fun, though.
Oh, big time, yeah. Because you'll be able to wind him up. You'll be able to get him to the point that he breaks, you know, right in front of you.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'm at it. I'll be in the press conferences.
There you go.
What kind of stuff should I ask him?
I'll fill you in. I'll give you a few pointers.
Okay. Did you love him warts and all, or were you kind of a little bit less sure?
I was always very cautious of...
Personality type.
Yeah.
Have you done similar work on the US team?
America, okay, currently we have Brooks.
Yeah.
We have Johnson. We have Thomas. We have Reed. We have Watson, Spieth, Fowler, and Simpson.
Oh, that's an unbelievable team.
Seven major winners, no rookies.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's worrying from the start. Yeah. They're all playing well.
And Furyk's got four picks as well.
He's got four picks.
Tiger.
So, has to pick Tiger.
Phil.
Has to pick Phil.
Does he?
Yes. Has to pick Phil.
It'll be hard. Like
we're left with...
They don't often, the US captains don't often go way down the list unless it's a guy coming back from injury and has battled his way into form, say, in the last four or five tournaments. They generally pick their four guys from the next eight, from 9 to 16. And Woods and Mickelson are 10th and 11th.
Okay, easy choices.
They're in.
Who are the other two?
DeChambeau.
He's just outside the bubble in 9th.
Yeah, I think he has to get a pick.
Okay.
Mad scientist. And then
you've
got a clutter of guys for one spot. So do you pick Tony Finau, my mate?
You love him.
Kevin Na?
No.
Stanley?
Please, no, not Kevin Na.
No.
Cantley?
No.
Snedeker?
Maybe.
Outside chance, Matt Kuchar?
Yeah, dependable.
He's better than an outside chance.
Good chance.
Given his record and...
And golf course is Daniel Dart.
Does Kevin Kisner have a chance as a guy who has contended in a few majors?
Yeah, not a great putter.
Is he not?
Under pressure.
Okay. I think Kuchar's a great chance.
I think so.
Okay.
Does having no rookies in your top eight and then adding Tiger and Phil, so say your top 10, although that's not the way the numbers are now, but say you've got those 10 guys, no rookies, does that then afford you a little bit of leeway? Because not often a captain will pick a rookie with a... As one of his wild cards.
No,
gives you a little more of a leeway to do so.
Yeah.
Given the experience you've got throughout the rest of the team.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Right. A major champion though in the last 13 months.
Pretty good rookie.
Yeah. I definitely think if Paddy Power come tomorrow, DeChambeau, Mickelson, Woods,
and Matt Kuchar.
Okay. Do you know what? If they were at a neutral venue, the US team's better, isn't it?
I don't think. If this is in America, there's no chance.
You don't want the Ryder Cup to come down to the course. And it bugs me increasingly that that's what it's becoming. So, I mean, the home team get too much control over the course, I feel. I don't like it. I think it should be on a venue that kind of doesn't obviously suit one team or another.
Not a lot you can do to Paris National to suit anybody.
Okay. It's just a tough course.
It's a target golf course. It's target off the tee, it's target on the green.
And who does that suit of either team?
It suits the Americans, for sure.
What would suit the European team?
I think more linksy style.
Okay.
Golf courses.
So this is just
which we have never really.
Why is that though? Given that so many of the European team play 80% of their golf in the States.
I just think they grew up in it, and I think they know how to play it, and you know it's a case of they're into it, and they really enjoy that kind of golf. While the Americans go, Jesus, that's a four club wind. You know what I mean? They're never really into it that much.
Does Bjorn hide the pins? Is that the best way to take on the Americans? They love the flag stick to be in the middle of the green, so they can just hole putts.
Yeah,
it's what they did 2 years ago.
Yeah,
every flag.
So do you not just tuck them away?
But you're tucking them into water, into the situation. So nearly when majority of holes have water on them, and the flags are tight anyway, so he can't tuck them any
tighter.
There's
not a lot you can do.
There's not a lot you can do. That's what I'm saying. Paris National is not a golf course where you can trick up.
Okay.
It's a golf course where I would say it would suit America more because they're used to playing over water. They're used to playing in the PGA, hitting a 9-iron, at a very small target.
So you're giving the Americans a big chance here?
Very much so.
Okay. Like to the point where you tip them, all things being
equal? Yeah, I would do, yeah.
Really? Yeah, yeah. Wow. Jeez.
And what do I know? Like, you know what I mean? You're giving out to me about Westwood, and I've pulled a few bloomers on this one.
To be fair, you explained your logic in Westwood. You're not saying you'd pick Westwood.
No.
You were explaining why Bjorn may pick
Westwood.
Why
I think he picks Westwood.
That's totally different.
Okay.
It comes down to partnerships as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You have to get the right guys and playing together. And
when we were calling you an idiot there, we meant Bjorn.
Okay.
That was sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
You were looking shocked at me, calling me an idiot.
You didn't make that clear at the time, though.
Can we finish on Seamus Power?
Yes.
So he was on the show last night. He was on Off the Ball last night. You can download that podcast. Short version for Power is he has finished number 125 of the 125 places you can finish. So he gets his tour card next year. He gets to pick all his events. He talked about being at home on the Sunday because he missed the cut at the Wyndham. And just having to watch the TV and pray that his livelihood wasn't pulled out from under him. And because it was Sergio Garcia who was making three bogeys in the back nine, but like was nowhere in the tournament, he was only seeing him every maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. He was like, where the fuck is Sergio? And getting on to his parents.
Have you seen him?
Yeah. Has he had his walk to his ball yet? And he said it was a lesson in just how slow golf is, actually. He was like trying to watch it was a nightmare. But you kind of know what that's like, obviously.
Yeah,
like,
been there, done hellish. That. Yeah, absolutely dreadful. I remember 2013, 14 was it? I flew last tournament of the year, had to go to Australia, flew to Australia, needed to finish top 20 to keep my card, and it was just painful. It was just one of the worst experiences of my life. I got over it. I finished 15, 16th at the time.
Were you nervous the whole way through?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't settle into
a
round.
You don't settle. No, my emotions got the better of me
the
whole lot. Yes.
Just don't make bogey.
Don't make bogey. And I don't know how I did it, but I pulled off it. In another situation, I was playing so well, I could have won the tournament. But I didn't care about winning the tournament. Yes. All I cared about was not making a stupid mistake.
Yeah.
And I had a stupid caddy with me at the time. And he really annoyed me because, he was there trying to, for me to win the tournament. I was going, hang on there, mate. I'm playing for my livelihood here. I might win, I might make a mess of it. Let's not make a mess of it and let's just get in the house and be happy.
He was giving you a 3-wood on the par 5 saying, let's go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going.
Was he just a local that you picked up?
No, he was an English guy. He'd caddied for me at the very start of my career.
Yeah.
And I swore I'd never go back to him, and of course I did.
I'd say you'd have slow, you wouldn't suffer fools gladly beside you as caddies. I'd say you get annoyed easily.
No, nobody'd ever know that I was annoyed. I'd go quiet and walk, you know what I mean? I would never give out to anybody.
Okay.
Never in a million years. I avoid conflict, my wife will tell you.
You went very quiet when we played the other day in Carlow.
I was tired, I think.
Like 4 holes in, you stopped talking to me.
Yeah.
It's good to know. So you understand what power went through, in short. And it's, yeah. I don't know how you perform under that kind of pressure. There's too much at stake over a 7-foot putt, and it's your whole life.
But at least you were in control of your destiny. You played on the Saturday and the Sunday, and you knew you needed a top 20 finish, where it was completely out of Power's control.
Yeah, it was awful.
He missed the cut, and he had to go home and watch it on TV, knowing that his fate was in Sergio Garcia's hands.
Yeah.
And that just must have been agonising.
Yeah.
I know, you don't want to be in those situations, you really don't. And to be fair, you know, the situation that Porrick was in, or Shane was in, was nothing even close to what a Seamus Power was in. You know, because they were going to get a couple of events, they were going to, you know, they had a category in the European Tour. Mm. Porrick can use his past winners category or his past money winners category. They're always going to get events. You know, Seamus was either going to play or he was going to have to go back to web.com and, you know, that fall series that they play, trying to get a card back.
Yeah, it's grim. And he was even
saying... He's done well today, Joey. Like, he's gone out. I'd say it was hard to refocus mentally for today. But he's shot level par, which is 5 off the lead.
Right.
Kevin Twaes is leading at the moment. Our pal Brooks Koepka just keeps doing it. He's 4 under.
Yeah.
He's back in the clubhouse today.
Maybe the weight is off Power. It's suddenly a bit easier to play. This is bonus material. Because he was saying if you come up from the web.com tour, as some players will now next season, as happens every year, like, even when you're in a lot of the tournaments, you get the bum deal. Like, you're the last person teeing off on a Thursday. So it's you and your Billy No Mates. Everyone's gone home and you're finishing your round at 8 o'clock and it's barely bright.
Yeah. Or you're first off.
Or you're like, you're
either off.
Yeah, you're
taking out the flags or bringing in the flags.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff. Like, we see Rory complaining sometimes, I don't like being in the marquee groups with, you know, Dustin Johnson and
get
and,
over it,
and like Jason Day. And like, but they like get the best tee times. They get the best of everything. Yeah. It's the poor lads on the edges that we don't see.
Well, that's a lot of the European guys would say the same. You know, you see guys turning pro, going to the tour school, getting their card, and they think this is fabulous. They've got their card. They finished in the top, you know, 25 of tour school, and they're expecting to play, you know, every week, and they might get one tournament out of the first 8, and eventually they think, you know, why did I go to tour school? You know what I mean? I've no card. You know, I've no ability to play.
Because they're the lowest category.
They're the lowest category. And that's what happens when you lose your card on tour and you have to go back. You know, you're nearly starting again. So it's not nice.
No fun. We are pretty much done. So this is the Denmark next week is the last week.
Denmark's last week, yeah.
Ryder Cup, and then we'll get the picks.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you what, if Lee West was picked.
I hope he is now.
You leave your phone on. You're coming on the show that night. I mean, we got to talk about this.
That'd I didn't think this was even an option. I hope. Yeah. I hope he picks Westwood. I hope he makes. I hope he makes a few dodgy calls, because he's not a nice dude. I've the same feelings toward Thomas Bjorn as I did when Darren Clarke got the job. It did not pain me one bit when the Americans won that Ryder Cup.
Okay.
Leave your feelings in the locker there.
It's Pearl Dave at the start of our sting who's asking him the question. You know, when Darren Clarke says, that's a particularly stupid question.
Oh, is it?
That
that's
guy.
You asked him the question.
That's me.
Oh, lovely. I knew there was somebody there.
Yeah. It was him. Yeah.
And it's still being replayed 7-8 years later.
It wasn't.
You made up for it, though.
Yeah,
you made up for it.
So listen, we're pretty much done. We've been here at the McGurk's in Naas, the custom fitting centre, and they're going to be sponsors in the pod over the next while. So it was nice to come out and see their brand spanking new centre. Thanks to the customers and some friends of the pod, you've stayed here patiently and quietly there in the background, so it's been nice to have you here. And Peter, thank you.
No problem.
Dave McIntyre, I'll see you at the next one of these. 6 months' time, you might swing back in.
Yeah.
Grace us with your presence.
If that.
Okay. Thanks very much. That's us done.
Cheers. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here. Starter kit right here.